This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Federal Reserve Board met yesterday, and surprise, well, no, not a surprise, I suppose, Fed Chairman Janet Yellen announced another rate hike that happened yesterday afternoon. With the Federal Reserve in this interest rate raising mode, what does this mean for average Hoosiers and, for that matter, average Americans? Well, it's time to turn to Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer to get some answers to those questions, and he's with us from his office here in Schererville. Thanks for being with us, Greg.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, first we found out here that the Fed's announced another interest rate hike, the third such hike in 15 months. Another one that's up, between a point to 1 point per average, and maybe more on the way. At least what? Maybe a couple, at least for the rest of this year into 2018. What are we going to expect here with this next rate hike taking effect? What kind of impact it's going to have on, first off, on mortgages? Tell us what we're going to see when it's time either to refinance or to set up a new mortgage for a home.
Well, a couple things. A lot of folks have had line of credits, home equity lines on their mortgages because the financing, the rate has been so low relative to anything else that they could. It was very inexpensive to utilize that credit. Most of those programs are on variable rates. So you'll see, those are all benchmarked, based on the benchmark with an additional rate to it. So as that benchmark continues to rise here, those interest rates will increase, so the cost of borrowing money is going to become more expensive. And if you haven't refinanced for whatever reason and you're looking to lock in a lower rate, now would probably be a good time to consider doing it.
Now, how about home equity loans, or lines of credit at least? What kind of impact is it going to have on those as well, too?
Yeah, and that's primarily the concern that most people have. A lot of people have locked their primary into a pretty low rate over the last several years, but a lot of them have established these lines of credits and home equity lines for a very small interest rate, and generally speaking, those are usually variable. Mm-hmm. So as they increase, people are going to want to decide at what point does that debt become unbeneficial in terms of the cost versus paying it down.
I suppose that's where you have to decide what you have enough. Make sure you have enough money in the budget to handle any increases if they come up. If you can't get that opportunity to refinance right away.
Absolutely, yeah. Because usually with those, the good and bad of them is you can utilize that equity at just in a lot of cases paying just the interest. The bad of it is as the interest starts to rise and you look to pay it off, if you're not preparing to pay it off, then those balances could be hard to reduce in the time horizon that the interest rates are going up, and you end up paying a lot more for the debt than you either hoped or anticipated paying for.
Now, the next thing we would take up is something that we talk about dealing with getting ready for retirement, that is to pay down your loans and the like and your expensive financing, because you want to save back as much money for your retirement years. And credit cards, certainly one of them here. Most credit cards these days, I think, have a variable rate. So that means there is a connection to the benchmark rate that the Fed sets. And so we're going to likely see interest rates and credit card rates go up now.
Yeah, absolutely, because you're exactly right. There is a direct connection to the benchmark rate. I mean, over the last several years, even credit cards that I personally had that were fixed finance rates all switched to variable. I don't think there's many opportunities to even get fixed rates anymore. Mm-hmm. And if you read the fine print on the credit cards, it's directly tied to the benchmark plus. And what that means is there's a set rate, and since the benchmark is that direct correlation, when you see a quarter hike in the interest rate of the benchmark, you're going to see a quarter hike in the interest rate on your credit cards, and it'll be a direct correlation moving forward. So again, that debt position is going to become more expensive.
Are we going to have an opportunity, do you think, for people to start paying down more of that high interest debt before that gets hit really hard?
Well, I think the biggest thing is individually, based on given personal situations, you got to evaluate the best strategy to begin paying it down. Interest rates have been historically low for a long time. It's not going to be a surprise if the market and economy continues the way it is. They're already announcing all these future rate hikes. It's going to become more expensive, and you need to start figuring out ways to eliminate that debt, because the cheap financing is going to go. It's not going to go away. The reality of it is we're still going to be, even with this rate hike, we're still at historically low rates, but it's going to be more expensive. If people have large amounts financed on these credit card debts, they begin to, accumulate and become such a burden to pay down the balance with the interest that becomes more difficult.
How about I'm sorry.
Go ahead. So you just need to start paying it down if it's going to become that burden.
Okay. How about student loans?
most of the student loans are still fixed. So the nice thing about that, the ones that generally the students have, they're a structured fixed rate where they can pay over the defined period. However, a lot of the loans that were structured and some of the changes that they did here recently in the last several years is, you know, the parent loans that they're obligated to get are not fixed. You know, so it could definitely, you know, again, cause strain on the finances for structuring those payments and paying them off from a household standpoint in terms of budgeting.
We're talking with Northwest Indiana Financial Advisor Greg Hammer about some of the impact that the next increase in rates from the Federal Reserve, as announced yesterday by Janet Yellen, we're going to face here to whatever our average costs are here in Northwest Indiana as a Hoosier and for Americans in general for that. We talk about loans, we talk about credit cards and mortgages and the like. How about savings accounts? Are we likely to see anything in positive come out of this change when we have the increase in rates from the Fed?
Well, I think the expectations are that you're going to start seeing an increase in the savings. I just don't think you're going to see much with this rate hike. Mm-hmm. Banks probably won't pass on a lot, if any, of that increase at all because they've been at such historic lows. I mean, a lot of people may have realized they've been getting charged just to have a savings account or a checking account. It's just because the banks were at the point where, you know, having just that money there without paying interest rate was costing them money. So over time here, if they experience all these different rate hikes, I think you'll start to see an increase in the savings. But as most of us know, the savings have not been, you know, attractive at all. There might be a 0.15 or a 0.25, and I don't think you'll see a big, substantial, direct relationship these first couple hikes because the banks have been down for so long relative to what they've been having in the spread and being able to be profitable with those accounts.
From what we talked about here in our conversation today, what would you say might be the main takeaway that that Hoosiers that have been watching very closely what the Fed has been doing in the boards making another decision here to raise the interest rates here for another jot upward? What should we know?
Well, I think the big thing is, you know, not panic. You're probably not, like we've talked about, experience a huge impact with just this hike, but it should be a wake-up call. The main thing is if you have things that are going to be impacted over time by a 1-1.5% type increase, which we could experience in that type of range over the next 4 rate hikes, you need to start figuring out the best way that you're going to address or reduce those debt positions. So it's not like a panic button. Hey, I don't ever see them jumping up like a percent or 1.5% in one rate increase. They haven't done that historically. It would make too big of an impact. But locking in rates now, paying off the higher interest debt more quickly or structuring your payment to do that, not using those positions just as a very inexpensive opportunity because it was available, and just, you know, understanding that at some point the cost of that debt leverage is going to be a lot more expensive. And begin to address it now when it's more manageable.
Now, we've noted here, and the Fed's already said, and Chairman Yellen has mentioned that the things are going to happen gradually. If they do happen, it might a couple more rate increases yet this year, maybe one or two in 2018, the way things look right now?
Exactly. So, I mean, that's the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway is that it looks like their plan is to move forward to continue to raise interest rates. So that being said, it should be no surprise, and people need to start looking, you know, at their individual positions of debt leverage and say, okay, if these are variable rates, how's this going to affect me? How's that going to affect the budget? Do I need to start looking at ways to either lock in those rates and or pay them off? And and don't let the gradual increase trick you either, because it sounds like it's coming. You know, there's no guarantees, but it won't be a surprise either.
Well, we've gotten this assurance from Chairman Yellen about the fact that they were expected, this even before we started to see the increases start to come into place here, that it was not going to be a big jump. It was going to be gradual because she was very well aware of what kind of impact it would have on not only the nation economy as a whole, but probably too what the individual is going to face.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, it's just it's been a long time coming. You know, we've anticipated it actually a lot sooner than what it actually has been because the economy has been doing well, but you just need to plan accordingly and make sure that you're not going to get stuck in a position where the debt leverage is going to become something that is going to create a financial burden.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough, I'm sure, for some people, especially if they watch the markets very closely. Stock market's going to see some impact from this as well, too, now?
I think that, well, it's kind of a, you know, it's a catch-22 because rising interest rates are generally an indication that the economy is still strong and they anticipate to be strong. So that's why you've seen the actual market increase yesterday after the announcement. Part of the challenge, though, is for those conservative portfolios is rising interest rates are going to make it more difficult for bond performance because you'll gradually see a higher payout in the bonds, but you know, usually there's an inverse effect on the bond values, so that might help or, you know, might lag the benefits of the increased rate. So it's going to be tougher, I think, in the environment to for conservative portfolios to perform at the pace they've been over the last several years, but there's still different ways you can structure it to take advantage of it. But overall, the interest rate hikes indicate that the economy's strong.
Been talking with Northwest Indiana financial advisor Greg Hammer, taking a look at the interest rate hike announcement coming from Chairman Yellen at the Federal Reserve Board yesterday. Another slight increase, as has been promised, and likely to see more very gradual increases in the future. Greg, thanks very much for being with us to talk about it today.
I appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for the time.
Throughout the year, the Indiana Supreme Court travels the state to show citizens what the state's highest court is all about. They hold what are called oral arguments. That's where they hear a case in front of an audience. Their latest stop was in Gary, where they also celebrated the retirement of Justice Robert Rucker, who is a Gary native. Lakeshore Public Radio's Stephen Lattimore was in the courtroom to hear it all. And he has this report.
The Indiana Supreme Court's oral argument here in Gary is designed to let people know how the court works and to see it firsthand.
The Supreme Court of Indiana is now in session. Please be seated.
Each side will have 20 minutes to argue. This is a civil case and transfer has been granted so that the appellant, Danny Sims, will argue first. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may.
We've learned throughout this that Danny Sims, he plays the system. He knows the system. Next, they argued, quote, he knows the system. This is his third time. This is his third DUI, which in fact was not the case. Plea bargains, he knows it all.
We're talking about punitive damages. And why is it not relevant that someone has twice been found to have broken the law?
Gary Mayor Karen Freeman Wilson says Gary native Justice Robert Rucker is a good example of how hard work pays off.
One of the most exciting aspects for me is not seeing them, although that's important in hearing them, but it's also an opportunity for the young people who are gathered here to see themselves where the Supreme Court is one day.
Justice Robert Rucker is retiring from the Indiana Supreme Court. Former Indiana State Senator Erling Rogers.
You know, if there's anything that inspires young people is to see someone come from their beginnings and be successful. And that's exactly what Judge Rucker has done. You know, East Side, Bethune School, and to work his way up to the Supreme Court is certainly a dream that young people might have, but to actually see that dream be a reality, I think it does a lot for these young people who are here today.
State Rep Charlie Brown has been in the General Assembly for over 30 years. He says Rucker's presence will be missed.
The saddest part about it is the replacement process, that it's very unlikely that we will have another African American on the bench. So we will be void of that kind of diversity on the bench, which is so important and significant in the state moving forward and accepting the fact that there are different ethnic and racial populations in the state.
Justice Rucker will retire from the court in May. In Gary, Stephen Lattimore, Lakeshore Public Radio.
Stephen had a chance while in Gary for that high court oral argument to talk to the Gary Roosevelt High School graduate about his life and his philosophy for success.
The mayor of Gary describes Indiana Supreme Court Justice Robert Rucker as a favorite son of Gary. He spent 26 years on the bench. He came back to Gary for an oral argument road trip. It's an opportunity to see the court up close that he never got growing up.
When I grew up, there was no way for me to anticipate ever really becoming a lawyer. I mean, I'm from a working class family. My dad drove drove taxi cab part-time and part of the time worked in the mill. My mom was a domestic, didn't know any lawyers, didn't know any professionals. So to even think about becoming a lawyer was just not something that was in my contemplation.
The opportunity gives the justice a chance to talk to students about how he decided to become a lawyer.
I never anticipated going to law school. After I came home from the military, I went to IU Northwest. Couldn't afford to go on campus, so I went to IU Northwest, and I was actually enrolled in a pre-med program. I was adamant that I was going to become a doctor. I met a young lawyer from Howard University who was a recent graduate. I went to him for some legal advice, and he seemed to know everything about everything. I was just so impressed. I said, is this what lawyers do? They can talk like this, and they can act like, and they know this kind of stuff? When I grew up, I want to be just like you. That same day, I left his office, drove straight to IU, abandoned my pre-med ambitions, and decided that I wanted to become a lawyer.
Okay. Thank you.
Justice Rucker says, don't let anyone tell you not to dream big, no matter where you come from.
I say that if Robert Rucker can, you can. That it's not your aptitude that determines your altitude, it's your attitude. What you think about yourself, what you think about others, how you comport yourself. So if you sort of stay on the straight and narrow, change your attitude, those C's become B's, those B's become A's, and you hold your chest, your stomach in and your chest out, things change.
In Gary, Stephen Lattimore, Lakeshore Public Radio.
As the Indiana General Assembly debates an $800 million road funding package, Indiana's water infrastructure needs more than $2 billion in urgent repairs. But Indiana Public Broadcasting's Nick Jansen reports that water infrastructure is taking a backseat to road funding this year.
Tracy Cadell is the superintendent of the Eastern Howard School Corporation in a Howard County town, Greentown, near Kokomo.
So you can see every drinking fountain has a filtration system. It's caused a little bit more work for our maintenance staff, but obviously it's worth it.
In October 2015, Eastern Howard Elementary School found elevated lead levels in its drinking water.
Do you remember what the results were October before last?
We were in the neighborhood in a couple areas of 30 to 35 parts per billion.
The standard for lead is 15 parts per billion, although there is no safe amount.
And then when where water was coming in at the source, which was non-drinking water, we were, in a couple cases, over 100 parts per billion.
The situation is better now. Eastern's most recent test results were between 0 and 3 parts per billion. There are school districts and towns all over the state with problems just like these. Lead drinking water infrastructure, or 100-year-old pipes, or pipes with big holes that leak water. Altogether, the state needs more than $2 billion worth of urgent repairs. The legislature is debating an $800 million infrastructure package this year, but the money is for roads, not water. There are two bills addressing water infrastructure this session, but neither free up any money. State Senator Ed Charbonneau proposed both. His bills would put the Indiana Finance Authority in charge of a pot for any future money allocated for water infrastructure. Charbonneau says he's had to take an incremental approach.
You can talk about timing. This is maybe poor timing to be coming up and identifying a $2.3 billion issue that needs to be addressed.
People have been waiting for road funding. Charbonneau says roads have long been labeled the focus this session. And by all accounts, Indiana's roads and bridges need the attention. The American Society of Civil Engineers gave the state's infrastructure a D+. But still, the question remains, why the tight focus on roads instead of water?
If people can't see it, don't spend money on it.
That's Andy Downs, a political science professor at Indiana University, Purdue University, Fort Wayne.
People can see roads, they can't see water pipes, they can't see sewer pipes. And we all know that several months ago, we had a small problem with a bridge over I-65, and that created a focusing event for everybody to look at, and suddenly roads became incredibly important.
Downs says while individual communities might have problems, those problems are not felt by all Hoosiers all across the state. But Superintendent Tracy Cadell doesn't see it that way.
Public health should have priority over roads.
He says he'd like to see the state dip into that budget surplus and start replacing dated and dangerous water infrastructure. In the meantime, he says local efforts are working in Greentown.
So we're confident that we've got plans in place. We flush our water systems now every Monday. Our drinking fountains all have filtration systems, as I already mentioned.
Eastern Howard is also working with Greentown and the Indiana Department of Environmental Management to continue testing its water. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Nick Jansen.
A coalition of groups is pressuring Indiana lawmakers to revive legislation that would allow judges to impose tougher sentences for crimes motivated by factors like a person's race, religion, sexual orientation, or gender identity. Indiana is one of only five states without a bias crimes law. And David Sklar of the Jewish Community Relations Council says that has to change.
We are seeing bias-motivated crimes happening in Indiana almost on a weekly basis. We have had bomb threats at our Jewish community centers, a bullet fired through the window of an Evansville synagogue, targeting of members of the African American community, LGBTQ community, the Muslim community. All of that has happened in Indiana just in the last 18 months or so.
Republican Senator Sue Glick pulled her bill from consideration on the Senate floor after a conservative lawmaker added an amendment that she says would have gutted the bill's intent. It's faced opposition from groups that believe it would create a special class of victims. But at a statehouse news conference on Wednesday, Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry says the bias crimes legislation would protect everyone.
We all have a race. We all have a sexual orientation. We all have a gender. We all have a religion, even if that is non-religion. And so as a consequence, those who would focus on the fact that it's supposedly limiting those who would be protected by this is just not accurate. It would protect everyone.
Sklar of the Jewish Community Relations Council thinks that there is still a path for the legislature to approve a bias crimes bill this session.
The bill is dead, although those of us that are in the hallway here at the General Assembly say nothing is dead until that final gavel. You know, we're trying to make the argument right now that there's still plenty of time for legislators to try to revive that language, insert it into another piece of legislation, and ultimately move it through the process.
Freedom Indiana spokesperson Chris Paulson says LGBT people are more likely than any other class of people to be victims of hate crimes, a reality that transgender Hoosiers like Amy Payton can attest to firsthand. Late last year, when her neighbor harassed and assaulted her at her apartment in Speedway because she's transgender, the lack of hate crime provisions under state law left her with little to no recourse. Paulson says right now, members of our communities are living in fear, and far too many are enduring vicious attacks and harassment. Indiana scientists, engineers, doctors, and entrepreneurs have been leaders in the STEM, which stands for science, technology, engineering, and math, fields for generations, it seems. From the inventor of the very first automobile gas pump to the first person to walk on the moon. Well, Hoosiers are still pioneers, and that's thanks to the Eli Lilly and companies work along with the orthopedic industry in the city of Warsaw and Dow AgriSciences coming up with an interesting thematic initiative working through the Indiana humanities. It's a two-year effort. It is called Quantum Leap, and it encourages Hoosiers to explore and celebrate the spirit of possibility and problem solving. Leah Namias is the Director of Programs for Indiana Landmarks, and she is with us today from her office in Indianapolis to talk about Quantum Leap. Leah, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
What an interesting project. How did the idea behind Quantum Leap get started?
Yeah, thanks. So we here at Indiana Humanities design programs around themes, and we try to change up our themes every couple of years. So as you can imagine, the last 2 years we've been really focused on the bicentennial, and one of the things that we kept hearing as we were going around the state with our next Indiana theme, which was all about what do Hoosiers envision for the future of the state, was how important people felt like the science and technology, certainly as a sector of our economy, as kind of a way forward for our state after, you know, kind of being a traditional industrial economy for a long time, that was really important. I think that we also had a sense that, you know, we have so many changes happening in our lives right now because of changes in science and technology, and we don't always have time to reflect or really understand what those changes mean, how they change the ways that we relate to each other, what kinds of ethical questions they raise. So we thought that all of these reasons were a good reason for us to engage Hoosiers in a statewide conversation around the ways that science and technology are reshaping our lives and communities.
Well, it sounds like, too, that some of the discussions that are going to come about, not only from the programs that the Quantum Leap Initiative is going to offer to Hoosiers and those of us here in Northwest Indiana in particular, but also, I guess, this discussion, we're just going to be delving into morals and ethics as well, too. It's, you're not going to shy away from many topics, I would imagine.
Well, that's exactly right. So in the humanities, they give us great tools for talking about things that we disagree with or that we're unsure of. And in fact, sometimes I think what they allow us to do is to say, I'm not sure I need to think about this and talk it all out. So that's part of what the humanities do. And I think questions, you know, we have a program coming up on May 9th that I'm really excited about. Mm-hmm. We work with a steering committee of leaders from, you know, universities and scientists and companies that are engaged in science and technology. And one of the questions that kept coming up in our discussions was the ways in which the public sometimes doesn't understand scientific evidence, and that a lot of the debates that we have about science are really come down to the question of evidence and facts and how do we believe or know what we know or believe what we believe. So things like, is climate change real? Are GMOs dangerous? Should I vaccinate my child? These are all questions that are really, when they come down to it, about the nature of evidence and how we know what we know. So we thought it would be really fun to have a statewide conversation on that topic. So on May 9th, which is a Tuesday, we're having a statewide event called Chew on This. And Chew on This is basically a simultaneous dinner party that happens in multiple restaurants at once. And one of our sites will be up in the region. And you can go on our website and see more information about this. But it'll be basically an open-ended conversation about these questions about evidence and facts and reliability and validity and things like that that are really both about how we know things in the sciences but also how we know things in the humanities. And, of course, you know, this is a topic that's top of mind for lots of people right now and fits really perfectly with our thematic initiative.
Well, before we had a conversation, I had a chance to kind of glance through the schedule of some of the events that are coming up during the two-year initiative. And before this May 9th group dinner, if you want to call it that, in discussion, there's also one that's going to happen in Indianapolis, maybe worth making the trek down to Butler University on April 20th to attend as part of, I guess, of an in-conversation series. Tell us who's going to be speaking at that, what they're going to talk about.
Yeah, I'm really excited. We're going to be able to welcome the author, Alan Lightman, who is really famous for writing a book called Einstein's Dreams. He's actually a physicist. He teaches at MIT, but he's one of these incredible people who also writes novels and fiction. So he kind of combines the humanities with STEM, which is what we're all about. So this book is really famous. It's imagining what would Albert Einstein be thinking about as he's coming up with the theory of relativity. But it gets into both, you know, kind of the physical world and the metaphysical world and the idea of creativity. Where do our creative ideas come from? Which is really kind of an exploration of science and the arts and the humanities. So that's one of several events we'll be doing as part of the In Conversation series. We're working with a poet who's from Indianapolis. He has a new volume called Map to the Stars. He is a Pulitzer Prize nominee. His name's Adrian Mateka. We're going to be doing an event with him. In August, as part of Gen Con, which is the big gaming festival that's in Indianapolis, we're welcoming an experimental game designer named Tracy Fullerton here, and that's going to be really fun. She has designed a digital online game based on Henry David Thoreau's book Walden, and it's really unlike any kind of game. It just explodes the notion of what a game is, as well as, frankly, what a book is, right? So we're kind of excited to do some events over the coming year that explore these intersections between the humanities and science, technology, et cetera.
Sounds like a great series of conversations coming up here. Like you say, that they're going to look into STEM research and bring those together and how they fit in together with the humanities. Interesting. We're talking with Aaliyah Namias, who is the Director of Programs for the new statewide two-year thematic initiative called Quantum Leap. That includes programs like the ones you've heard about here and other things, grants, other resources that will be made available to communities, and also radio. In fact, we've offered one of the features up that we will be hearing more of during the initiative on Quantum Leap. Tell us how some of these radio vignettes ideas have come about, Leah, and in turn, how they're going to be turned out that people get to hear. They will hear here on Regionally Speaking.
Indiana Humanities is creating a series of short stories, audio stories, that will be broadcast on air, including at Lakeshore Public Media, as well as released as podcasts. We're calling them Quantum Leap Sound Bites, and they're all stories about moments of scientific discovery or innovation in Indiana history as well as in the present of Indiana. Indiana has an incredible legacy of inventions and inventors, so we started looking for stories that maybe were a little less well-known. I think a lot of us know the story of Neil Armstrong and the man on the moon, but they might not know, and the very first episode is all about a lab in Bloomington in the 1940s. A Holocaust refugee was relocated. At the time, Indiana University was hiring lots of Jewish scientists who were fleeing Europe from the Nazis. So they came to Bloomington. This guy basically discovers he has an insight about how bacteria reproduce, and this leads to all of this genetics research. So he kind of is a father of genetics. A lot of people know about Watson and Crick, who discover the structure of DNA. He was the teacher of James Watson, who was a student at IU. So that story is really, really important. He went on to win a Nobel Prize for his research, and a lot of Hoosiers don't know that story. So that's the kind of story that we want to tell as part of this series. So we're picking stories. We're working with an amazing producer who has been doing all this great research. We've also been working with some of our friends who are in the history community to tell us what stories we may not know about. So that's how it's come about, and we're very excited about it. It's an experiment for us.
Speaking of stories, let's talk about the One State, One Story, and that's an interesting concept that will come about with the discussions and presentations, one big presentation in particular that's going to happen in Indianapolis in September. The novel is Frankenstein. How did Frankenstein come into the picture that is going to be mentioned in the Quantum Leap Initiative?
So Indiana Humanities is partnering with the Indiana State Library on a statewide read of Frankenstein. So if you're not familiar with Frankenstein, you probably know like the image of the creature from the Munsters. But what you may not know is that it is the best book that's ever been written about scientific discovery and invention and kind of what can go wrong if you're not careful. Because, of course, the Frankenstein is not actually the monster or the creature. It's the inventor. It's the scientist. It's Dr. Frankenstein who creates them. And it's all about, you know, his excitement and his zeal to invent a new type of life. But then that life comes to life, and there are all kinds of unintended consequences. The book turns 200 in 2018, so we thought this is a great book to read and think about the questions that surround science and its role in society, but it's also a great chance to celebrate an incredible book. You know, a lot of people also don't know it was written by a teenage girl. There's so many pieces of Frankenstein. So we're going to be doing all kinds of stuff. So in the fall, libraries and schools and community organizations can apply to us for funding. We'll send you book sets so that you can organize a read of the book in your community. We'll be doing other kinds of events, including a big festival and readathon here in Indianapolis at the Indiana Medical History Museum, which is this incredible place that has like brains in jars and things like that. So perfect place to read Frankenstein. So we're really excited about that, and more information about that is on our website, indianahumanities.org, as well as more information will be coming out over the next several months leading up to that 2018 anniversary.
Interesting. Now, in addition to what you'll find out when you go onto the website and learn in general about the Quantum Leap programs, there in particular is one here in Northwest Indiana that you'll have a chance to enjoy some fresh air and ecology by as well as the connection between the humanities and STEM. And that is a field trip, which one of several, I guess, around the state. But tell us about the one that's going to happen here in Northwest Indiana.
As part of Quantum Leap, we are taking adults on field trips. We're calling them Quantum Leap field trips to sites of scientific inquiry and investigation. So laboratories, observatories, research facilities. And one of the places that I am obsessed with is the Indiana Dunes. So a lot of people think of the Indiana Dunes as a place for recreation or for artistic inspiration, but they are also a living laboratory. They are the place where Henry Chandler Coles basically proved a theory of ecological succession, and there's ongoing research that happens there today because it's such a unique ecosystem, such a unique landscape. And so we're going to be going and really thinking about it as a laboratory, as a place where a scientific theory was proven and how we can observe and do that. We're actually going to get a chance to do some testing along the way and some collecting of evidence. And then we're going to have a conversation because one of the ideas that Henry Chandler Coles really unleashed into the world is this idea of the interconnectedness of all living things, right? That's kind of what ecology is about. I'm going to put that in very humanities terms. Mm-hmm. But that idea that we're all interconnected and if you change one part of the system, it affects other things, that's an idea that is also an idea in our culture, not just in science. So that's kind of where we're going to bring in the humanities piece of it.
Once again, that is coming up at the Indiana Dunes, and it's going to be on September 16th, so mark your calendar. And, of course, you can always check the Quantum Leap page on the Indiana Humanities website to find out more particulars about that. The Indiana Dunes, yeah, definitely is a laboratory, in fact, as it turned out to be that way, for some IU Northwest professors who are doing some investigative work after the Mount Baldy sand dune collapse and swallowed mm-hmm. up a young man who luckily survived his encounter with the sand dune. But they were trying to figure out, well, why did this sinkhole begin? How did it get started? And that's how the Indiana Dunes turned out to show itself as a true ecological laboratory. It's interesting how these things can kind of turn out that way. Leah, tell us how people can find out more about the Quantum Leap website.
Yes, so please visit indianahumanities.org, and when you go there, you'll see the link to go see everything there is to be about Quantum Leap. So you can learn more about our Frankenstein programming, about our field trip, about that upcoming event in May called Chew on This. We'll also be doing some grant making, so there are opportunities for you to invent and imagine your own public program that combines the STEM and humanities fields, so you can learn more about those grants on our website, and let us know what you think.
Leah Namias is the Director of Programs for Indiana Humanities, talking about Quantum Leap, which is the new statewide two-year thematic initiative that shows the resources and the like that help celebrate Indiana ingenuity in STEM fields. And Leah, thanks for being with us to talk about it. Looking forward to hearing more of these Quantum Leap sound bites in the weeks and months ahead. Thank you for being with us. Lawmakers in Washington are still trying to figure out exactly how to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Side Effects Public Media's Jake Harper reports that the latest GOP plan, the American Health Care Act, has mental health and substance abuse treatment providers worried.
Obamacare forced Medicaid plans to cover mental health and substance use treatment. It also expanded Medicaid to millions of poor people, including about 260,000 Hoosiers. Doug Walter of the American Psychological Association says many of those people really need mental health treatment.
These are the patients that are at high risk for domestic violence, substance abuse, untreated psychiatric conditions. It goes on and on and on.
But Walter says those improvements will be rolled back under the GOP's new proposal. A recent report from the Congressional Budget Office says millions of people could lose their coverage under the American Health Care Act. Not only that, but the law would not require Medicaid to cover mental health and substance use treatment. Walter says with the feds paying a smaller portion of Medicaid costs,
it comes down to, do states have the ability to actually pay for these services? And I would say that many don't.
The bill is currently facing criticism from both sides of the aisle, and it's still unclear how it might change before it makes it to the president's desk. Jake Harper, Side Effects Public Media.
A local band is making some waves in Lowell, as we find out in this from Lakeshore Public Radio's Sarah Opat.
Busted Knuckles, a classic rock cover band in the region, living right next door to Freedom Park in Lowell, Indiana. The four characters bust out the music in what's known as The Shack, a haven for music lovers and summertime jammers. It used to be a tool shed, but now carpeted and furnished with an L-shaped couch, what seems like millions of amps, guitars, and a drum set. So who are these characters?
Hi, I'm Jake Hardesty, your vocalist and guitar player.
I'm your bass player, John Eisen.
And I'm Chris Jackson, the drummer.
And I am Tony DiMario, and I play rhythm guitar and back of vocals.
The musical journey began in The Shack.
Well, The Shack kind of started as a dream with a vision, I guess, you know, more so than a dream. I got a drum set one day, and I always wanted to learn how to play the drums. I was like, well, can't have them in the house, might as well do it in a shed. So kind of ripped everything up and just started practicing and learning, forcing myself how to play the drums. The Shack is very, very detailed. There's a lot going on in there all the time. I mean, you just look around. There's everything and anything you could possibly imagine hanging up on the wall.
So how has The Shack evolved, like, within the past year?
Within the past year, we could definitely say it got carpet. That was pretty big.
When I came there, it was just the tool shed.
Yeah, so. It was pretty much just a tool shed with a couple futons and a. But then after I met Jake, after Jake and I connected, we brought Johnny along, and we were like, "Yeah, let's do this right." And we tore everything up and out, built some new shelves, put in carpet, got a new couch, leather too. It's really comfortable.
Chris Jackson, the drummer, stepped in the band a few months ago during one of Busted Knuckles' sets in late fall. It was a bar in Shelby called Findlay's.
Actually, Sarah brought me to come see them play, actually, and Tony DiMario and I used to work together at a factory.
Small world.
Yeah, and he said, "You play drums, how about you hop up there?" Mm-hmm. And that's how that all started, actually.
It's so funny, we all knew each other semi before we started playing. I mean, John and I grew up in the same subdivision. Jake and I had like one interaction throughout the summertime. I don't remember what, maybe at the beach or something. Chris, like he said, I had worked with him. And it's also funny because we're all exactly 1 year apart. I'm 2010, John's 2011, Chris 2012, and Jay's 2013. So we all have this little bit of
we were all in the same school at one point,
right?
We
didn't even know about it. All the things we thought were important then don't mean now.
Sometimes shack life isn't always smooth sailing. There can be hurricanes at times, aka Tony's mom, Eileen.
Hurricane Eileen comes, in different stages.
Comes and goes.
Yeah, but it's as long as you can please it, the storm doesn't ever escalate. It stays. You can calm it down just by doing whatever the task at hand may be.
But music doesn't always calm the beast.
No, that's just it. You would think you could just play a song for it to calm it down. No, it won't do it. Unless it's the right song. Slow Ride or something.
Members of Busted Knuckles work construction. They don't have soft hands, but that doesn't stop them from firing up the tunes in the shack every day.
So I think the best is still yet to come.
And I mean, to add on top of that is our practice schedule, too. Like, we practice almost every day.
Mm-hmm. On top of our work schedule.
Exactly, which most bands, they don't have the opportunity to do that. We all live so close, right next to each other. We have optimal time to take advantage of, so...
The name Busted Knuckles cuts deep into personal meaning for the guys. Johnny concludes.
Well, originally we were a three-piece with just me, Tony, and Jake. And we had an owner at the bar call me one day. And she's like, what's your guys' name? And at the time, we had still not come up with a name. And at the same time, Jake and Tony said Busted Knuckles. And I thought they were kidding, but I still told her anyway.
Well... Behind it was, I think, about that same time, within probably 20 minutes of us getting that text message or whatever, Tony had just punched one of his cymbals, which is his signature move on the
Sliced
drums.
Sliced open,
Obviously not on purpose, because it doesn't feel good, I can imagine. So he's always busting himself up and bleeding all over the place, so I'd say that's where it really came from. Mm-hmm. But then, we had to come up with, like, an actual kind of, like, thing behind it, too, so... Yeah. I was thinking, we all are construction workers and hard workers, and we've put a lot of hard work into this band, and anybody who's ever done any kind of physical labor or hard work of any kind understands what it's like to have a busted knuckle.
The next show for Busted Knuckles is St. Paddy's Day, Friday, March 17th, at the Lowell Town Pub.
Support our local bands, man.
These guys are my neighbors. I've learned how to move past playing a broken maraca to learning ukulele and guitar. Thanks to music, these members come together.
You can find more of Sarah Opat's pieces on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org. On this week's Shelf Discovery, Kristen listens in on the adventures of a late great Hollywood legend with Make 'em Laugh by Debbie Reynolds and Dorian Hathaway.
Haul out some of your favorite classic movies, because this week's Discovery explores the loves and laughs of a Hollywood icon. Thanks for tuning in to this week's Shelf Discovery. I'm your host, Kristen Dreyer Kramer, from nightsandweekends.com. With the sudden death of Debbie Reynolds in December of 2016, Hollywood lost a true legend who spent more than 60 years on stage and screen and in tabloids. And in the audio edition of Make 'em Laugh, co-written with Dorian Hathaway, she looks back at the people she met along the way. This 2015 release isn't really a memoir. That's 2013's Unsinkable. Instead, it's a collection of stories about the people Reynolds knew, loved, or just met through the years, more like the outtakes from her more formal memoir. Here, she relates anecdotes about her travels and her run-ins with foreign royalty. She gives tributes to her dearest friends, some famous, some not. She talks about the famous comics she's known, and she offers little tidbits of stories that can only come from a lifetime in the spotlight as a beloved Hollywood legend. From its stories to its narration, Make 'em Laugh feels like an afternoon listening to your favorite grandma recount her favorite stories from her life. It's filled with random anecdotes and asides that ebb and flow and meander right along with her train of thought. At times, you'll wonder why she included certain stories, but it all still makes for an entertaining listen. And Judith Ivey's narration is appropriately filled with a kind of energy and sometimes random inflection that you may get from grandma's stories, too. But then again, your favorite grandma probably isn't a Hollywood legend. So instead of stories about her crazy cousin Mabel, you'll get stories about being groped by Prince Philip, or about Eddie Murphy stealing her pen. They're not all wild and crazy tales, but they certainly have their share of madness and a little bit of gossip, too, for a charming and often funny walk through the life of a Hollywood great. But is it worth meeting these old Hollywood pals? On a scale of buy it, borrow it, or don't bother, I say borrow it. Whether you're a fan of Debbie Reynolds or just a fan of Hollywood, Make 'em Laugh is an intriguing insider's look at showbiz through the years. Well, it looks like we've come to the last page of this week's Shelf Discovery. Make 'em Laugh by Debbie Reynolds and Dorian Hathaway is 5 hours and 51 affable and amusing minutes long and is available from Harper Audio. For more information, along with show archives and even more reviews, visit shelfdiscovery.org and nightsandweekends.com. And feel free to send any questions, comments, or recommendations my way at books@shelfdiscovery.org. Until next time, wherever the week may take you, don't forget to bring a book.
Dedicated to helping busy readers wade through the shelves and shelves of options to discover books that are often worth their limited reading time, Shelf Discovery can be heard on Thursdays here on Regionally Speaking as Kristen Dreyer Kramer offers listeners a brief look inside the pages of a new book. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us. Taking a look at some of the topics we'll bring up next week, well, we'll delve into some of the improvement projects that are planned for the City of Valparaiso's Parks and Recreation Department. Tower Park in particular, we'll find out more about that as well, and other conversations bring you as well to bring you up to date here in Northwest Indiana, coming up on Regionally Speaking next week.